The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hey, this is Red Leg Nation Radio. I'm Chad Dotson. Joining me today is my old buddy. He's not that old, but I will say he's my buddy. One of the longtime editors at Red Leg Nation. Been there as long as I have. Chris Garber, how you doing today, Chris?
Doing great, Chad.
Good, good. You enjoying this Cincinnati Reds team?
They are fantastic.
Oh, man.
They're the best team I've seen in a long time that's been 20 games out by the start of the summer.
It sounds to me like you've caught Reds fever.
Yeah. Well, I grew up with this, and you did too. I mean, this is what, when I was a kid, I was a little young. I knew the Reds were great in the Big Red Machine. But I really, you know, developed my Reds fandom hardcore in the 82, 83, 84 season, which was some really awful times. But if you can make it through that, I think you'll make it through about anything.
I think maybe that's the reason why maybe we get a little bit less upset when the Reds are like this, because you're right, I'm the same way. That's how I came to know the Reds. I knew about the Big Red Machine. I knew about, you know, what Bench and Rose and Morgan, all those guys had done, but my guys were the Bruce Berenis of the world in 1983. And so, you know, and then they had a little bit of success and then went back to being awful again. And this seems kind of like the natural state of things, really.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, you know, the suffering we did and the getting excited about Dwayne Walker and Gary Reedus and guys that if we knew then what we knew now, we wouldn't have been so excited because they were 28, 29 years old and peaking out at batting 275. But we made it through that, and what we got was Eric Davis and Barry Larkin and Paul O'Neill. I don't necessarily see that on the horizon, but I think that's the hope, right?
Well, yeah, that's the hope. And I think, well, I'm always looking for reasons to hope. And there are some young guys. I don't know if we've got any Eric Davises on the horizon, but on the pitching side, there's some young guys that maybe cause you to get a little bit excited, unlike what we had in 83 at originally, like you're talking the Dwayne Walker years, and also unlike what we had, say, in 2001, when really there was nothing on the horizon, although we didn't necessarily see it at that time. Cody Reed, for example. Cody Reed's going to be making his Major League debut this weekend. Now, does that excite you a little bit?
That's really exciting. I think, you know, I think I'm a little shell-shocked from pitching prospects in general, so I'm sure. A little wary of pitching prospects, so I don't get quite as excited over a Cody Reed as I might have a Jay Bruce years ago, but man, Cody Reed looks like the real deal. As much as any 23-year-old prospect can be, he's somebody you can get excited about.
Oh yeah, 6'5", big guy, throws hard, great slider. You're right. There's no such thing as a pitching prospect, as they always say, because of the injuries. It is a little more difficult to get too excited. But you know, for all that we like to criticize Walt Jocketty, and there's plenty of reasons to criticize, and we can have a whole podcast or a series of podcasts on that. I'm not necessarily defending him here, but you know, we traded Johnny Cueto last year, and we all love Cueto, and we wish Cueto were still a Red in a lot of ways. But the three pitchers they got for him are now in the Reds' rotation. I mean, that's, you know, that's something.
That's a lot. I was noticing that the other day. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't the first one, but that's something, man. I mean, you're less than a year out, and you've got three guys, all of whom are, you know, deserving of a spot in the rotation. Yeah, there have been injuries, but I mean, this isn't the guys who were starting in May.
Right. It's not Daniel Wright or some guys, not that, not to criticize Wright too much, but it's not fill-in guys. These are guys who have a chance.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't think they'll all pan out as top starters. I mean, it's, they're no, you know, Pulsifer, Isringhausen, and Wilson.
Right, right. But, oh, mercy. Now you get but, me, you know, my head hurt.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. To me, it really is amazing that as much as we bash Jockety here 9-10 months out, all three of these guys are there.
Well, we kind of laughed about, you know, it's not a rebuild, it's a reboot, and that's still, there are reasons to laugh about that. But if you think about it, you know, he got three really major league ready guys. You know, in less than a year, they're in the big leagues, and that's pretty impressive. And young, talented guys who may not all pan out, but they've got talent.
Well, they're here as quick as we need them to be.
Yeah.
And you know, the other half of that, there's no such thing as a pitching prospect, is the part that gets overlooked a little bit. It's not just any pitching prospect can get hurt, but it's also, if you can pitch, you can pitch. Like, there's no such thing as a prospect, because once you can prove you can pitch, get him out there and let him start getting guys out.
Yeah. Well, that's a sort of a description of Cody Reed wasn't a particularly highly rated prospect, started to prove he could pitch, and has flown through the levels of the minor leagues up to the majors. So, that's exciting. You know, I like Brandon Finnegan, the John Lamb, who's starting, we're recording this during Friday night's game, who's starting tonight and not particularly pitch efficient, but having a pretty good game. You know, Lamb may be a guy that ends up being a reliever. Finnegan has been good this year. He may be a guy that ends up being a reliever. I don't know, but these are guys that there's some upside. And to me, when the team's so bad, that's really all we can look for. These are guys that may be able to help the next good Reds team. And to me, that's exciting.
Yeah, I think so. I think one way or the other. I think Lamb just, I just don't think he throws enough strikes to pitch seven innings, game in and game out. But he is effective, and he knows how to pitch, I think. So you're right. These guys are going to be useful one way or the other, in the next good Reds team. And it, you know, we have made fun of the reloading thing, but if they can cycle 4 or 5 really top quality pitchers in again, and they might happen to have an infielder or two, and Jesse Winker works out, that's actually back to being a pretty decent team again.
That's been my my point, I guess. And again, a lot of this I will concede is me trying to wear those rose-colored glasses and you know, trying to be optimistic, because it's more fun when the Reds are good. But yeah, if they are able to put together a rotation, and you can sort of squint and see how they could put together a really top-notch rotation. And then they've got a number of guys. I think about names like Michael Lorenzen, and if Raisel Iglesias is not able to, his shoulder's not able to stand up to starting. Got other guys, John Lamb, maybe, that sent out to the bullpen, and all of a sudden you've got a pretty good bullpen, too. So your pitching staff's set. You've got, you know, in terms of young guys, hopefully Jose Peraza is going to work out, and Winker, and Suarez, I don't know. He's in a funk now, but he's still young. You hope Eugenio Suarez is going to turn out. And so you start looking. There's really only a couple of spots here. Mesoraco, the catcher, is going to be a big question mark until he can prove he can stay healthy. But, you know, you can squint and say they're not that far away.
Yeah, you know, I have myself convinced, and then I just started looking at the roster again. And you say, you know, who's really producing right now? Well, it's Votto. It's Cozart, who's probably not on the next good Reds team. It's Jay Bruce, who's probably not on the next good Reds team.
Oh,
although,
come on now.
You know, I mean, I think the guys on Red Leg Nation have done a great job of explaining and making the case for why Jay Bruce should stick around. I mean, he is only 29. Adam Duvall, I don't think Adam Duvall is a 900 OPS guy forever, but
that'd be nice.
It would be. So I don't know. I go back and forth. I mean, I think a guy like Mesoraco is a real linchpin to them being good quickly.
Yeah, that's a good point. He could be, you know, if he can get healthy and stay healthy in here 2 straight years, he hasn't. That's going to really help them take a big leap forward over where they are now. I'm with you on Bruce. I mean, you know, I understand Bruce is probably going to get traded, but I think that the difference is, as you said, he's just 29. So you can make a case, unlike some of these other guys the Reds have traded, you can make a case that signing him to an extension is not a terrible idea. I mean, he could be, you know, he'll be in his early 30s if the Reds expect to compete in the next couple of years, and, you know, still hitting the ball. Cozart's probably gone, I would think. Votto's around forever, and Votto's back to being Votto now, thank goodness. So, you know, Duvall is something actually I wanted to talk to you about now that since you brought him up, because you said on Twitter, I don't know, last week, a couple weeks ago, hey, you know, might be time to start thinking about trading Adam Duvall, because is he ever going to have more value on the trade market than he has now? And I think that's an interesting point. He's not. Adam Duvall can't be the hitter we've seen here. He can't sustain this, can he?
I don't think so. I mean, I made that case, and I was trying to qualify it a little bit. I mean, the real thing is, if you're the Reds, you know what you think Adam Duvall is. You've got in your mind and your scouting reports and your statistical projections, you know what you think he's going to be. And if you really think, if you really thought he was going to be a 900 OPS hitter, then ride it. You've got him for $500,000, and you've got him for team control for a long time, and just go with it. But if your projection said Adam Duvall is the kind of guy who's going to hit, if he gets 500 at-bats, he's going to hit 230 and hit 22 home runs, trade him right now. Because nobody, I mean, somebody out there might believe he's a 900 OPS guy, or think he's an 880 guy or something, and pay you more than he's really worth. So it really does depend. I mean, he's 27. This is the ceiling you're going to see from Adam Duvall. I just don't know if it's a hot 6 weeks or if this is what you can get 3 years out of him.
Yeah, and you're right. It's going to largely depend on what the Reds internally think about him. My thoughts about him are this is a lot of fun. I'm enjoying watching him just pound baseballs all over the field. Extra base hit after extra base hit, 19 home runs at this point. I always thought, and I don't think that what I've seen so far has changed my mind, that he's a, you know, fourth outfielder type, can fill in and be a big power bat off the bench maybe. That .291 on base percentage and the refusal to take a walk just scares me. And striking out 28% of the time just scares me, you know. So, you know, I don't know if you trade him, but...
I mean, here's the thing that's funny is after I ran my mouth the other day, I decided to look in to see if I actually could support what I was talking about. This isn't actually that far out of line with his minor league numbers. I mean, I think his minor league OBP is a little higher from when he was at the lower levels. He had a couple really good years at Class A, but at the AAA level, you know, he was an 880 slug, 880 OPS guy, 278, 333, 548. I mean, he's not walking at all in the major leagues, and that's the difference. But the rest of it, it's pretty close to what he did.
So maybe he's the rare guy that can somewhat sustain. He's not going to be this good, but can sustain a decent level of production.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, or we're going to find out when he goes through the league a second time that it all disappears.
Yeah.
But and I get it. I mean, you know, a lot of people disagreed when I said that on Twitter the other day. And I get it. I mean, he's the one bright spot on this roster. I mean, you can try to get excited about Dan Straley or something, but, you know, guys hitting 20 home runs before the 4th of July, that's cool.
Yeah,
and on a really lousy team, it's really cool. So, you know, I get it. You know, Jay's having a good year, but Jay is probably on his way out. Suarez had a good start, but Suarez has been cold. Votto's started horribly, and now he's picking it up. So the only, you know, consistent bright spots on this team have been Adam Duvall and Zach Cozart. So it's, you know, I can see it's not popular to trade one of them.
Sure, absolutely. Just from a PR standpoint. But there's also a case to be made sort of both ways, that he's never going to be more valuable versus he could be a contributor for the next 3 or 4 years. I don't know. I know that they started putting Jesse Winker in right field in AAA a little bit. Of course, he went on the disabled list today.
What happened there?
Wrist injury. Not sure exactly how it happened.
And
actually, we hadn't seen that reported anywhere. I'm going to give a little bit of praise to our friend Jason Linden for Red Leg Nation. He has been going to some of those Bats games and going into the clubhouse and talking to some of the guys. Louisville was kind enough to give Red Leg Nation a press pass this year, and he actually spoke with Winker. He wouldn't elaborate, but he did say he has a wrist injury. Well, they evidently did an MRI today, and he's put him on the disabled list. I haven't heard anything else, but I think Jason broke that news, actually. We're not usually in the news-breaking business, but that little tiny piece of news was broken right on Redneck Nation.
It's come a long way.
Yeah, right. If Bruce is traded, you know, maybe they think Duvall and Winker can handle the corner spots in the outfield for the next couple of years. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. Let me. I'm just looking at something here that I want. You mentioned the corners of the outfield. I want to talk about center field for a minute. And as of entering tonight's game, three players in the Reds have almost exactly the same OPS. And I don't think anybody in a million years would have guessed that those three players would be hitting the same when it's all added up. And it's Brandon Phillips, Billy Hamilton, and
easy for you to say.
Eugenio Suarez. See, I ripped Tom Brenneman, but he can say that name really well.
Oh, he's good at it, yeah. All of a sudden.
But those guys are all at the same spot. They're all just a couple points apart, right around 700.
Yeah.
And I would have never in my life guessed that Billy Hamilton would be out hitting Suarez late in the season.
Especially as hot as Suarez started. So a point that I was going to make on Duvall is like in triplicate for Hamilton, which is that, let me just shift back to Duvall for a second, which his defense has been actually very good. Both the eye test and all the metrics show that his defense has been good in left field, surprising everyone. But that reflects on what I was going to say about Hamilton. If Hamilton can hit, you know, he's around 270, 308 on base, 394 slugging. If he can do that, I'll take Billy Hamilton in center field because of what he provides with his legs and what he provides with his glove. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is a step forward for Billy Hamilton. Is it his ceiling? I don't know. It's the first time, though, in a couple years we've seen any real progress at the plate. And that's another reason to, again, if you squint a little bit, to get excited. I don't like that Brandon Phillips doesn't surprise me. I don't like that Suarez at this point. I had hoped he'd be significantly ahead of Billy Hamilton's offensive numbers because certainly Suarez doesn't provide the value of the glove.
I haven't been watching Suarez close enough to be able to tell what's bothering him and what's his struggles are attributable to. Do you have any idea?
I think a large part of it, in my opinion, is this is the first time he's ever played third base. Or he played like five games there in single A, I think. He's learning the position on the major league level, and it's really hard to learn a new position on the major league level. These are the best players in the world. So I think that's part of it. He was not a great defensive shortstop in the first place, so I don't know.
I know we don't want to date this podcast too much, but Eugenio Suarez just threw a ball into right field from third base as you were saying that sentence.
Oh my goodness.
He tried to field a little bunt and just...
It's starting to make me think that if the Reds ever think about having a third baseman who's either of his name start or both start with E.
That's probably not a great idea.
Dating back to our old buddy Edwin Encarnacion, who I wish his bat were still in the Reds lineup, but nowhere to play him in the field.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Suarez then. Well, let's go back to Hamilton quickly, and then we'll circle back around to Suarez because I do want to talk about him. What do you think about Hamilton? Is he a guy that are you starting to think maybe he can be a part of this lineup for the next few years? I didn't know before this year. I still don't know.
I don't either. But you know what we've seen so far in 50 games. Sure, I'm totally with you on that. I mean, you know, he a 700 OPS with that glove and those wheels. That's fantastic. I mean, he's not walking at all. He's walked eight times this season, but
it's more than Adam Duvall.
Yeah, you're right. You know, but if you somehow pretend last year didn't happen, which I'm happy to do.
Yes, please.
I mean, Hamilton's just a little bit better than he was in 2014, and he's just a little bit better across the board, pretty much. A little bit more power, a little bit more on base. You know, so if there's a natural growth curve here. I don't know. I'd be happy to see it. I mean, you can at least squint and see that argument. I feel like we're in one of these spring training podcasts where we're right, looking at the bright side of everything and giving the benefit of the doubt to everybody. But I don't know. I mean, I guess that's what you do when you're 20 games out by Flag Day.
Yeah, I think you got to look for reasons to be excited. And you know, Billy Hamilton is just 25 still, so you know, he still has some room for growth. You know,
that yeah.
I'm happy to see the bright side right now, because the other side of it is just too painful at the moment. But yeah, he's such a joy to watch when he actually does get on base, and he's such a joy to watch playing center field. And you know, the defensive metrics really have hammered Jay Bruce this year, and I don't believe those are.
That's one of the most frustrating things that I've seen, and you know, I want to trust those metrics, but they've had Jay Bruce as a really bad outfielder for quite some time now.
Well, I wonder if having Billy Hamilton out there stealing so many balls and covering so much ground, whether that affects the certainly the range figures for the corner outfielders. It seems like it would.
I would think it would. Supposedly, you know, and I may get it wrong, but the stuff FanGraphs uses, I looked at this exact question a few weeks ago, and supposedly that's all factored in. I just think maybe Billy Hamilton's so extreme a case and has such great range and is so far all over the place that it may just break this. It may break the system. They may not be able to account for how tremendous Billy Hamilton is and how much he limits what Jay Bruce can actually do out there.
I'm like you. I want to believe the metrics, and obviously the defensive metrics have always come with the caveat that, you know, small sample sizes. You know, you need to take it with a grain of salt, but the eye test with Jay Bruce, I don't see that he's fallen off the cliff. I'm not saying that I see that he's a Gold Glover out there anymore as he once was, but I'm not seeing it, so I have questions.
I don't know. I mean, he's got three errors in, you know, 60 games of playing, so it could be as simple as, you know, a few miscues like that will throw everything off. I don't know. I mean, I'm just trying to look for something to explain away why people keep telling me Jay Bruce is no good in the field, and I watch the games and I say he's still pretty darn good.
Pretty good at the plate too, isn't he?
He really is. It's that's been a lot of fun to see. I mean,
that has been, you know, we've talked about Straley, which is a fun you know, thing, and Adam Duvall, but for some of us who've watched Jay Bruce in his up and down struggles, it has been fun, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been really exciting to see, and you know, he's such an affable guy that he's very affable. He's really a guy I root for. I mean, all the time, and when he does poorly and he makes a giant mistake, I feel bad for him. I don't get mad. I feel bad for him, and when he does well, I feel so thrilled for him. I don't have that relationship with anybody else in the Reds, I don't think, but that's how I feel about Bruce. And he's one of those guys, you know, I talked about throwing out 1 year of Billy Hamilton stats. Jay, you'd have to throw out two seasons.
Yeah.
And let's just pretend those never, ever happened. I mean, it's a very odd thing for a guy to hit 27 years old and be awful.
Yeah, just crazy. But,
yeah. He went right off that cliff. And, you know, I don't know if there's a comparison for somebody who was, you know, a really good player like Jay was and then was a really terrible player. And then came back to be a really good player. I mean, this would be his career season if he keeps it up.
Yeah, I mean, how many guys can there be that were two-time All-Stars by the time they reached their age 27 season, and then they're done? And it was starting to look like that was Jay Bruce. He was done. I mean, he was declining already. So, and this, again, we're just over 2 months into the season. May not last, but so far, by far the best season of his career, By every statistic.
Yeah, but. And he looks good too. I mean, this is what I thought. If you came to me in 2012, 2013, and said, "What's Jay Bruce going to look like when he's 29?" This is it. This is exactly what I thought you'd see. You'd see a pretty patient guy who waits for his pitch, who knows the things he can hit and the things he can't, and he just has tremendous power.
But it couldn't be more different than what we've seen the last 2 years. Baseball's such a funny game. I don't understand it. I never will. But he does look, if you watch the games as much as we watch them, I know it's anecdotal, and I know the sabermetric community will smack me down for saying it, but man, just watch the guy, and he looks like a different hitter. He's not swinging at those, you know, breaking pitches down the way that he always. I mean, how many times have we seen him strike out on that pitch, and he's just not doing it anymore?
Yeah, that to me is what it is, and I just don't know what he was doing the last year. The last couple of years, if he was trying to do something, you know, if he got a little bit freaked out when he struck out 185 times in 2013. And he said, I got to change something up. Because he struck out less, but he hit the ball a million times less.
Yeah.
So I just don't know. Or maybe there's an injury that we didn't hear as much about as we should have. But what you said is exactly it. He doesn't get fooled as much. He doesn't get jammed up as much. He lets those pitches go by, and he hits the ones that he can hit. The last couple of years, it almost seemed like when he got a hit, half the time it felt like he ran into it by accident.
Right. And when he got two strikes on him, the pitcher knew what he had to throw, and Jay was never going to hit it.
Yeah.
I have a theory, and it's based on nothing, but, you know, this is our podcast. I can throw out theories if I want. That first year, he had that I guess it's the wrist injury that sapped a lot of his power and messed him up a little bit. And he was striking out a lot. And just based on some of the interviews they had with him, and you talk about a guy that's affable and that you root for, it, even when he was struggling, he stood up and answered the questions and made no excuses. But he started to say things and made it sound to me like he was trying to be Joey Votto. And it's not bad to try to emulate Joey Votto, obviously. But Votto,
it's tough. It is tough.
It is tough. There are very few players. And it looks like he just got away from what got him to being a top prospect and got him to being a two-time All-Star and got him to being Jay Bruce in trying to change to be more Joey Votto. That's my theory, and it really just – he couldn't do it. And this year he's back to the guy we saw a few years ago, but even better. Well, that's – again, that's all supposition, and it's probably ludicrous. But that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, there's something out there. And I bet you if we spend enough time looking at – because I think it's approach. I really do. I don't think it's really mechanical. I don't necessarily think it's health. I think there's something different in his approach. And I think if we sat there and poured over the ball strike data and what pitches he swung at and what counts and how he did, I think you'd find it. I think it's out there somewhere. But I don't know that I'm smart enough to figure it out. And I'm not going to ask why.
Well,
you know,
yeah, let's just
Jay may know why, and Jay shouldn't tell anybody what happened. He should just be happy that he's crushing the ball right now.
And you know, we've talked about Duvall, who's been fantastic, but across the board, all the sort of advanced metrics, WOBA, WRC+, OPS+, Jay Bruce's hitting numbers are, and even OPS, are head and shoulders. Well, not head and shoulders, but they're the best on the Reds. It's a legitimately great season that he's having. I couldn't be happier for him. I hope he keeps it up and maybe gets that third All-Star game.
I hope he keeps up his current pace and ends the season with about 15 triples.
I know, leading the league in triples. What's that all about?
I have no idea. I have no idea. But how many of those triples did he get thrown out on the bases trying to stretch to a home run? It only happened one time?
Yeah, I think just once. I'm looking here. The Reds have 12 triples on the season as a team. And Jay Bruce has six of them. I mean, you could have – how much money could you have made in Vegas on that bet if someone were willing to lay odds on it?
And Tucker Barnhart has one too.
And Tucker Barnhart has one. Yeah, Tucker Barnhart's tied for second on the team with one.
Yeah, tied with Billy Hamilton, Tyrell.
Right, as you would expect, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we said we were going to circle back around to Suarez. Let's talk about him, you know. Eugenio Suarez, first caveat, he's just 24. Young guy who's hit better on the major league level than a lot of players at his age. Todd Frazier, who he replaced this year, was not even in the major leagues at age 24. Suarez started off hot. You talk about cratered. He's not looking so good right now. I'm not particularly concerned about the offense. I think it's going to come around enough for him to be. I mean, like I said, he's just 24, and he's demonstrated some ability. He's in a funk now. Baseball's hard, especially for young guys. Whether the defense permits him to remain at third base, that I don't know. But what do you think about Suarez? You think he's the long-term answer at third base?
I don't know. I don't know he's going to hit enough to play third base in the major leagues on a good team.
Then where does he play?
I don't know. Can he play second base with Peraza next to him?
He was a shortstop. You'd think he could play second base, and that would minimize some of those bad throws, hopefully.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think he's going to hit. I don't think he's going to hit for incredible power. And, You know, so and he's not going to be a 400 on base percentage guy, I don't think. But he's going to be a useful hitter.
He does have 13 home runs.
Yeah, he does have 13 home runs. It's really odd when you look at his line. He's got the same number of home runs as he did all last season, and he has the same number of walks as he did all last season.
Hmm. Well, that is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you look at those two numbers, you're like, sweet, this guy's on a roll here. But it's everything else.
Yeah, then you look at the other numbers, right?
Yeah, I mean, he traded a bunch of doubles for home runs, almost a straight trade, really.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think he'll hit. I don't know if he'll field. I mean, baseball history is filled with guys, young players who were moved to third base, who were awful to start with, and ended up being okay. I mean, that's an old story.
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, it's the Todd Frazier story, kind of. I mean, he wasn't much at third base to begin with, but he turned into a pretty good one. So he could learn it, I think. I just don't know if that bat's going to play there or not. I mean, obviously the Reds just drafted a hitting third baseman.
Right, yeah.
And I know they don't draft for need, and they you know, they probably would have drafted any position except maybe first base. But Suarez, there's a plan B there. If Suarez doesn't work out at third, there's a plan B right there.
Yeah, I mean, a college, talking about Nick Senzel out of the University of Tennessee, the Reds picked number two overall. Yeah, a college third baseman played in the SEC. I know he started in single A today, as a matter of fact, first professional game. But yeah, not too far away, you would think, if he performs. I don't know about Suarez. I don't know where you play him. The guy that jumps to my mind, which disturbs me a little bit for some reason, is Willie Green. You remember Willie Green?
I can't forget Willie Green.
How can you forget Willie Green? Who could hit a little bit, but never could really stick for whatever reason.
Well, you know, Willie Green, my memories of Willie Green are all tied up with my Jim Bowden issues. And the
you Willie do have, Green's going to... You do have Jim Bowden issues.
I do. I think I do. I was a big Jim Bowden fan for a long time, too. And I think he finally wore me out. But, yeah, I mean, Willie Green's a guy that if you look back, he hit a lot better than I remember him anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember him being a kind of a colossal failure, and that's not totally true. And some of it was a hitter's era, but he hit the ball pretty well there for a couple seasons. But, yeah, I don't know. How do you see Suarez and Green? What do you see as a comparison? The fielding?
I think so, yeah. The fielding and whether they're ever going to be able to find just a place for him or whether he's going to I don't know. Maybe it's an imperfect comparison, but for some reason, I see that guy. Really, I'm just trying to avoid a comparison to Edwin Encarnacion.
I'm avoiding a Brandon Larson comparison.
Oh
so
man,
we've got
worse.
A whole back catalog of failed third base prospects that we can try on for size and then throw away.
Yeah, I don't know. I think of a guy that we have a lot of hope for, which was Willie Green. And then you know, I'm starting to wonder: is he going to pan out? And I shouldn't be. I'm turning into Marty Brenneman here.
He's young man,
24 years old. What would Marty say?
I don't know if that young man's ever going to figure it out. Is that what he said?
That's what he said.
Pretty
about,
close, anyway.
Yeah, something like that about Johnny Cueto, and I think Johnny Cueto figured it out.
I think he did. I think he did. I also remember him saying that about Eric Davis when I was a kid.
Oh wow.
And I think Eric did all right, too.
Well, and that's a common theme of this podcast over the years is young guys are going to struggle sometimes. So maybe we just need to slow down a little bit on Suarez. Maybe he will learn to field third. I don't think Todd Frazier was ever this bad, but I do remember the Reds playing Todd Frazier in left field and in right field because they weren't sure he'd stick in the majors as third baseman. And he turned into a pretty good defensive third baseman, certainly above average.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about Frazier is, I mean, he really got his real start when Joey Votto missed the better part of a season.
Yeah.
And Frazier played first.
Right. So, you know, Suarez, I don't know. I think it's way too soon to tell. I would like to see him in the middle infield, which is strange to say for a guy who is having trouble fielding at third base, to move him the other way on the defensive spectrum. But some combination of he and Peraza. I don't know that I can. Again, we're talking a lot about squinting and trying to put guys in places, but I could see that, especially if a guy like Senzel can play third. I thought Duvall might be the third baseman, but he's
acquitted himself kind of
well.
They kind of gave up on that, or just, you know, at least for now.
Well, he wasn't very good defensively at third base either, by all reports. So.
The interesting thing about Duvall, and you kind of alluded to this earlier, he's a good athlete.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a really good athlete. He's not your Greg Luzinski slugger type guy. He's a guy that can move around pretty well. I mean, he's a big dude, but he moves really well.
Yeah, oh yeah, he's athletic, absolutely, and not what you expect out of a guy with the statistics that he has, the power statistics. You know, you expect a big lumbering Rob Deere type or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. There's so many questions, but there are some options as well. Before we leave the offensive side of the ledger, we probably ought to spend a little bit of time talking about Joey Votto, because he's finally back. He's finally hitting again, and I don't, what took so long?
I don't know. I mean, I'll just say this. I wasn't worried. He looked bad a few times. He looks confused a few times. But the thing about Votto is he's always got something going on in his head. And I think we've, as fans and people who kind of think about baseball, we've at least gotten past bashing guys who are cerebral and who think about the game. I remember as a kid, Mike Schmidt was always a guy that said, "Oh, he's always in his own head. He thinks too much." And that was kind of a knock on Mike Schmidt because he was thinking about how to do his job better. And I think Votto is that to the extreme. And thankfully, people kind of leave him alone about it. They'll bash him if he's not hitting, then he's not hitting. But I think Joey's always trying something. And you never know what it is because he doesn't share that. But he may have been trying something with his swing or with his timing or with his approach. And it didn't work. And I think it was some of that. And I think it was some bad luck and batting average on balls in play, bad luck, and just stuff like that.
And so, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Some of it also, I think pitchers were pitching him a little bit different, and he was sort of trying to work through it and figure it out. But I'm like you, I wasn't worried about Joey Votto. Now, it was the first 2 month stretch of his career, and so I wasn't happy to see that, and it was strange to see. But he's such an elite hitter; he is liable to be, by the time his career ends, the best hitter any of us have ever seen in a Reds uniform. I mean, we can argue about that, and there are some other great ones that we've seen in a Reds uniform. Of course, I never saw Joe Morgan playing for the Reds. But there's a good chance he's in that inner circle, you know.
I think so. I mean, honestly, last season, bought all the goodwill and the faith that Joey Votto will ever need from me.
Yes.
After 2014, which was just a kind of a lost year, in a lot of ways. I mean, it was that, yeah, he had the on-base percentage, but geez, there was nothing else going on there. And he came back last year, and you thought, look, he's 30. Is this the beginning of the end for Joey Votto? And no, he came back last year, and he killed the ball all season long. He had, you know, he was third in the MVP, and he deserved it. So I will put my faith in Joey Votto that he's not done, and he's ready, and he's going to be hitting again before the season's out.
Oh, within 3 weeks, his OPS is already back up to 821. His OPS plus 121.
Yeah.
I mean, he's already a productive hitter, above average. He's got season numbers are already well above average. Yeah, he's Joey Votto. Yeah, the guy had 7.5 wins above replacement last year. I will give him the benefit of the doubt. It was really strange to watch, and I was really confused about what I was seeing because he did look really bad sometimes, as you noted, but I think we're seeing now that he's a special player. He's one of the special players that Reds fans need to enjoy watching every single at-bat, because he's going to be gone someday in about, I think he's got 19 years left on his contract or something. But he'll be gone one day.
My kids are out of college. Joey Votto might not be a Red anymore.
Right, exactly. But no, he's got seven years after this year left.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm not willing to speculate whether he's going to be hitting this well at age 39, but right now, enjoy it. He's a special guy, and he is really cerebral, and there was something going on there, but I would not be surprised if for the rest of this season he doesn't just hit like Joey Votto. So, and that's another reason why this team may be a better, much, much better team in the second half than what we saw in the first half. That's my hope. with the pitchers coming back from injury and some new guys coming up from the minors, I think there's a significant chance the Reds are not going to be, you know, 15 games above 500 in the second half. But I think they could be a 500 team, and that's something compared to where we were when they were just a few short weeks ago when they were on pace to lose 111 games. So if you're looking for reasons to be interested in the rest of the season, maybe there's something.
Yeah, well, you know, they've been – I mean, the month of May was pretty bad. There's no way to sugarcoat that.
Yes.
But they've been, on the whole, a more entertaining team than – they are a good team. Like, they're a bad team, but they've gone about it in a pretty fun way a lot of times.
You know, I'm not sure I can quantify what I'm getting ready to say here, or whether I am eloquent enough to put it into words, but I think I understand what you're saying, and I have actually enjoyed watching this team way more than I have any right to have enjoyed a team that's lost so many games, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get at, and I honestly, I think most of it's that I don't care if they win or lose.
That's probably.
I mean, I really. They blow these games in the ninth inning, and when the bullpen was in that really horrible funk, and I just expect it, you know.
And it was kind of funny. I mean, at some point, you're just like, "How are they going to do it again?"
What can you do? What can you do? I mean, if you're a player or a coach or a manager on this team, I get it. They're getting eaten up inside. I mean, they're probably missing sleep, and they're just. Because if they're not, if they're okay with it, then they're gonna have a lot of. They're never gonna be good. So I feel bad for the players and the people associated with the club. But as a fan, look, I'm kind of just counting up six inning games now. How the Reds doing after six? How the starting pitcher do? How the batters do the first three times through the lineup? After that, whatever happens, I don't care.
Right. I said something earlier in the year about is it possible? I can't remember exactly how I worded it, but. Is it possible that the Reds are really one of the best teams in baseball? They just have a historically bad bullpen, and I wonder if you just go innings one through six, what would our record be at this?
That's a really fun idea. I don't know if there's a way to do that without it being too much work for my lazy rear end. But
exactly, yeah, I'm not gonna look that up. But
that's a lot of math.
Yeah, some enterprising listener needs to do that. And here I'm pretending that we have any listeners.
No, not you, the other guy.
Right. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, one of our listeners. Pitching on the pitching side of it, we've sort of, you know, there's not a whole lot to say because a lot of the guys that have pitched so far aren't going to be around the rest of the season. Once we get Cody Reed's coming up, I think Robert Stevens is liable to be here next week. He's been here a couple times already. Homer Bailey's coming back soon. We just got Anthony DeSclafani back. So the rotation is going to be completely different. The one guy that's probably going to be still in there that, and you mentioned him earlier, is Dan Straley. I still think that's a great story, Dan Straley. You know, the guy was on the scrap heap. The Reds picked him up off waivers at the end of spring training, never appeared in a spring training game for him. And, you know, 3.66 ERA in 12 starts. Go Dan Straley.
Yeah, you know, that's the one guy who, I mean, it's amazing how everybody who could be bad was bad this season in the pitching staff. I mean, they're all at the bottom end of their possible projections. But except for Straley. And Straley is a legitimate enough guy that I believe it. I mean, I think this is the kind of performance he could actually put up for this team for the next few years if they keep him around. And he's not an old guy. He's had some success in the past. I honestly don't know what all these clubs were doing, just throwing him away. But Houston, I feel like Houston could use him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't understand it either. I mean, I know that he did have a dip in his velocity, evidently, and he worked off in the offseason with the same group up in Washington, up in Seattle, who worked with Caleb Cotham, another favorite Reds bullpen member of the 2016 season. And he did get some more velocity this year, but he's a guy that he's just 27, and he was a top prospect. And he had, other than the fastball, he had a couple of good pitches. I just don't understand how everyone whiffed on this guy, and the Reds, who were looking for pitching that was cheap, grabbed him. I mean, he was traded in the from the Astros to the Padres for a backup catcher, a 35-year-old catcher. During spring training. I mean, I I can't, my feeble brain can't process that.
I mean, the Padres have made a lot of really crazy moves, and that might be the dumbest one. I mean, they trade a guy. Now, they didn't give up anything, but they trade for a guy, and they keep him for what, 36 hours?
Basically, yeah. They try to get him through waivers almost immediately.
I didn't get it. I mean, again, that's another team that could use a pitcher. And they didn't even know if he was any good or not.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they had him throw one bullpen, and they're like, never mind. It's strange to me. But, yeah, Straley's a guy. I mean, I don't want to get super excited about him. But that's a real find. I mean, it almost makes sitting through Alfredo Simon worthwhile. And I will admit, I think I've watched one Alfredo Simon start this year. When he's on, for a lot of reasons, I just can't stand to watch it.
Yeah, just tune out. I mean, how many guys still have a job halfway through June with a 9.45 ERA?
Yeah, I remember how mad we were when Jason Marquis was doing not even that badly.
Yeah.
And yeah. I was so indignant about that last year. Now, Simon's like, I just set more things on fire.
Oh, gosh, yeah. They've got to get rid of him, hopefully soon. But you're right about Straley in terms of not getting super excited. Let's not pretend like he's going to be the ace of the rotation for the next 5 years. But he's a guy that maybe he's just a fifth starter or a swing man or even just a reliever. But he's still a guy that I think can provide some value to this team, and they got him for free.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you want to put a group of guys together, and Alfredo Simon will keep him out of it, but if you've got John Moskett in that group and Tim Edelman in that group and Daniel Wright and, you know, Tim Melville, Dan Straley's way ahead of all those guys.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I mean, both in potential and in actual performance. I'm surprised, although, that they're cycling through so many of those guys. I guess they just figure one of them's going to get hot at the major league level and do something they've never done in the minors. But Straley, you know, is not in that group, I guess is what I want to say.
No. You know, and while I'm looking at the numbers, no, Straley is a guy that I think, and I use this term a lot, but it helps me to sort of focus on which guys are worth keeping around and which guys are just sort of transients. But he's a guy that I could see helping the next good Reds team in some role. Alfredo Simon, though, I mentioned this on the last podcast, and I'm going to say it again because, you know, we're talking about his 9.45 ERA, but we're not doing justice to Alfredo Simon. His FIP is only 7.21.
He's been the victim of some bad luck.
Right. He's unlucky. His ERA should be somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 instead of...
He's got a whip above 2.
I've never seen that in a guy that's pitched, you know, started 11 games. Come on.
Oh, my gosh.
He's pitched more innings this year, 53.1, than we used to see Aroldis Chapman pitch in a season. I mean...
He may have given up more runs than Chapman did his whole career.
Probably. He may have struck out just a batter or two fewer as well.
Yeah.
An ERA plus of 44. Oh, my goodness. That can't be real.
Well, the amazing thing is it's not the worst on the roster.
I know. It's not. Oh, that's embarrassing.
Setting aside minimum innings requirements, there are 3 other guys worse than that on the roster.
Oh, gosh, including our buddy J.J. Hoover, I guess.
Yeah, J.J.
I don't know what to think about him. J.J. is another guy, like we said about Bruce. He's sort of a stand-up guy. He's never made excuses. He just, you know, and he's a guy I thought had legitimate closer stuff at one point.
Oh, I did too, but, yeah. I mean, you know, 4 years is a long time for a relief pitcher.
Sure is. Even the elite relief pitchers. We talked about Chapman, but he's an anomaly. You know, very few relief pitchers are able to sustain any kind of performance year in and year out. So, I don't know.
Yeah, JJ was good last year, but I tend to believe that the numbers aren't lying for him right now.
I think you're probably
right.
He's been
every bit as bad as that 11 ERA shows him to be.
But the way I sort of look, yeah, I think he has been as well. The way I look at this bullpen, though, and the way I said earlier about laughing at when they screw something up some different special way, is that none of these guys are probably going to be around the next time we have a good Reds team. A lot of these guys that we're talking about as starters are going to filter into the bullpen because they're not going to be able to handle being a starter. And Iglesias is one of those guys, which really bums me out because Iglesias has such good stuff, and I really hoped he would be able to. And he still may be a starter, but. Not looking like his shoulder can handle that. Maybe. I don't know. But the bullpen There's so many live arms in this organization. Some are going to get hurt. Some are not going to work out as starters. You got to think there's enough, though, that they can maybe put together a decent bullpen and a decent rotation. That's my hope, anyway.
I think so. And I don't – look, it hasn't worked out this year, but I don't really fault them for how they went about building this bullpen. I mean, they had Cingrani and they had Hoover out there, and Ohlendorf and Wood, Cotham, those aren't terrible guys to try.
Right.
Every single bet they made went bad, and you know, sometimes you flip a coin 10 times in a row, it's going to come up tails 10 times. It's not real likely, but it happens. And that's kind of what I think they with the bullpen they assembled. And the good news is, it doesn't matter.
Well,
and like we talked about, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, for the first that's the reason why it never bothered me so much. For the first time in, I don't even remember the last time the Reds before a season said, "Okay, we know we're not going to compete." Even last year when they lost 98 games, they tried to pretend they were going to compete until they got through the All-Star game. So why go out and spend money on a bullpen? These guys are all reasonable risks to take, I guess, if you're just looking to throw people out there. They all screwed up in some way or another. Although, you know, Cingrani's been a little bit better lately. And Blake Wood's been okay, although I don't trust him ever.
Yeah.
But, you know, who cares? It doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me. The Reds were going to be bad this year anyway. They weren't competing for a playoff spot. If these guys worked out, maybe one or two of them worked out and ended up being good relievers who could stick around for a couple years, good. That's great. If they all flame out, then whatever. Who cares?
I mean, the truth of it is, if Jumbo Diaz had come out and pitched with a 2.2 ERA, it's just been another guy they could trade at the end of the year.
Yeah. That would have been that's the upside of any of these relievers. They're not going to be around. Although Cingrani's only 26, so maybe he has a chance.
Cingrani might be. Cingrani, you know, he's got to throw strikes.
Oh, yeah, I mean, and that's why he couldn't last as a starter. He just threw too many pitches. He couldn't throw strikes consistently. But I don't know. He could turn into sort of one of those lefty, those loogies, lefty one out guys.
Yeah, that's not a bad floor. Yeah, for Tony Cingrani.
You can make a career out of that. If you can find Tony La Russa out in Arizona, maybe maybe he can make a career out of that. But I don't know. We spent too much time talking about the bullpen, I think. So. Any other thoughts about this pitching staff? We've sort of beat it to death, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I'm just waiting to see. All these guys, even a guy like DeScofani, who was really good last year, and guys like Iglesias, they still got something to prove. At least from where I sit. So, whether it's their health or their consistency or just being able to do it more than one year.
Yeah.
I'm just going to sit back and watch the rest of the season and hopefully separate the Straleys from the Josh Smiths and see what we can do for next season.
Yeah. What about Homer Bailey? You know, I'm a big Homer Bailey fan and always have been. Very interested to see how he responds to the Tommy John surgery and if he ever gets back. There's been delay after delay and. What's the use in rushing him? Again, it's a lost season, so why would they rush him? But is Homer Bailey going to be a guy that is going to? I mean, he's going to be around because he's got that contract. But is he a guy that you know we can depend on to be? I don't see him as being a top of the rotation guy anymore. But you know, maybe
I don't know that Homer ever was a top of the rotation guy, other than a few weeks in the 2014 or 2013 season. Honestly. I mean, he's a good pitcher. I think he'll come back and be pretty decent. It's worrying and a little frustrating, the constant setbacks that – and I bet every team's like this. Obviously, it feels like the Reds – we pay attention to the Reds, so it feels like the Reds have, you know, tons of setbacks when other teams don't. But I'd like – I know it's a lost season, but I want Homer to come back and pitch. I'd like to see Homer have 15 starts this season so that we don't go through next season – And we hear, well, he's got to build up his strength, and maybe he'll be ready. He's going to be on pitch counts in the first month. And, you know, that's kind of what I am. I don't care about how he performs this year, but I just want him to get his work in.
Yeah, build up some of that stamina. You know, I think there's a case to be made that with all the talent, if everything pans out like you hope or most things pan out, maybe Homer's the fifth starter or the fourth starter on the next good Reds team. There's that phrase again. But I had hoped – before the injury that he was sort of a number two guy. And I think that his performance, I think he was, there was a time, and maybe I'm trying to say this because I wrote a piece over for ESPN about how Homer Bailey is finally an ace, and then he proceeded to, you know, make me look bad. But it doesn't take much work to make me look bad. But if he can come back and be a number four starter, and the Reds have guys like Reed and Stevenson, and who knows, maybe Iglesias and DeSclafani, he could still be he could still help this team.
I think so. I think so. He's one of those guys that some folks might have wondered if he would ever figure it out, but he did figure it out. I mean, he put up a 2.5-3 seasons of innings eating really good baseball.
Yeah. And at times during, like you said, during spans, even elite, I mean, even very good, which is what got me excited back in the day. Around those no-hitters, and he was legitimately good for a while. It was a short while. But he was above average for a couple of years, 3 years. The money complicates everything. The big contract he got complicates everything in terms of how Reds fans view him. I'm still hopeful he can come back and have some really productive years for the team. Maybe, you think?
I hope. This whole Homer Bailey topic has me just putting my arms up like the, I don't know.
Right, yeah.
Icon. Like, I had no idea.
Yeah. That icon, whatever that, I don't know whatever that is, that's going to be the title of this podcast.
Okay. I don't know if it's an emoji or what.
Yeah, whatever
that's how
it is.
I feel.
You know, who knows? And actually, that could be another alternate title for this podcast is who knows. You can make a case that things are looking up and that things are doing well, but really, who knows? Everything could go wrong too. You just don't know. Now the big important question is in terms of the Reds' current team and looking forward. And I didn't warn you that I was going to ask you this question. So I'm going to kind of put you on the spot here.
All right.
Can you tell me with any amount of certainty what color Trans Am John Lamb drives?
I know a lot of John Lambs from growing up.
Oh man, they were all over my high school.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
So I'm fairly certain that John Lamb drove a black Trans Am in high school. Since he's gotten a little bit of money, he has upgraded to the, I guess it's kind of like a maroon color with T-tops.
Oh, nice. But does he still listen to REO Speedwagon?
I don't think so, and he would probably call them a name.
Probably, yes, probably. So, I hope John Lamb makes it just so we can watch that guy, just because he looks like
I love it. He looks like you remember on the Dukes of Hazzard when Bo and Luke were in some sort of labor dispute and they brought in Coy and Vance, the lookalike other cousins?
Right, yeah.
I think if that had happened again, they could have gotten John Lamb to come in for the...
Yeah, he'd be Coy, I think.
Yeah, he would have been Coy or whoever the alternate Coy was if Coy had, right, had gone on a walkout. I have no idea what John Lamb is actually like. I mean, I think he's from California.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
Southern California boy. I think his grandfather was like the PA guy for the Dodgers for years.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, John Lamb is probably nothing at all like
No,
this caricature we have in our minds.
I think about when I was in, like an eighth or ninth grade, and these guys, these seniors that would stand out by the dumpsters at my high school smoking cigarettes. That's who I picture every time I see him pitch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a definite dazed and confused vibe going on there.
All right. Well, I think we've sort of beaten this Reds team to death. Anything else you want to say?
No, I don't think so.
Well, it's, it's fun to talk about them, I guess, even when they stink. And so I guess we'll keep doing it. Chris, appreciate you joining me. I'm going to be calling on you a lot more in the coming weeks and actually the coming months for reasons that we'll let everybody know at some point. I expect to be talking to you a lot over the next year.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good talking to you, buddy.
Thanks, Chad.
I'll say, as I always do, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You can also go to redlegnationradio.com and you can subscribe there, and there's an RSS feed you can subscribe. If you do subscribe at iTunes, or even if you don't, go to iTunes and give us a rating and a review. That helps us helps bump us up in the rankings a little bit. It helps more people discover us. Tell people about us. Like I always say every podcast, though, if you like us, give us a rating or a review or tell your friends. If you don't like us, keep your mouth shut. Follow Chris on Twitter at cgarber8. I got that right, didn't I?
That's me.
At cgarber8. You can follow me, if for some reason you might want to, at DotsonC. At Red Leg Nation is the blog's handle. Follow us there. We're following the Reds every single day. Really appreciate Chris Garber joining us. And for Chris, this is Chad Dotson saying, so long, everyone.
Ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.